Today, the church begins a little bit of a deviation in terms of the readings that we are being provided. For the next five Sundays, we're deviating from following the Gospel of Mark. Probably some of us didn't even notice it, but what we've been this year, we've been following the Gospel of St. Mark. The Gospel of St. Mark, however, is the shortest gospel. It's packed, very dense, but it's the shortest gospel. And so the Catholic Church picks these next five Sundays to deviate a little bit from the Gospel of St. Mark. And we focus on the five Sundays using the Gospel of St. John to focus in on the meaning of the Eucharist. So as you come to church the next five Sundays, you're going to notice that all of the readings have to do with the mystery of the celebration of the Mass or the celebration of the Eucharist and how Jesus founded it and what it means. So today, I'd like to begin that series that we're going to be focusing in on the Eucharist in a sort of a roundabout way. I'd like to begin by talking to you about Buddhism. Now, you might say, well, what does that have to do with the Eucharist? Trust me, that's why I went to school. You see, Buddhism is a very interesting religion. I get a kick out of studying non-Christian religions. I love to study Hinduism and Buddhism and Islam and Taoism and Judaism and, of course, all the different forms of Christianity. Buddhism has a very interesting premise. You see, Buddhism is silent about whether God exists or not. You can't say, well, what's the God of Buddhism like? Because they don't speak of God. The central part of Buddhism started with the founder of Buddhism, which of course was Siddhartha Gautama, several thousand years ago. And Siddhartha was a prince, and he was kept in the palace, and his father was trying to shield him from all suffering, all the problems of the world. And so he lived a very idyllic existence. One day, Siddhartha decided to sneak out of the palace, and he wanted to go out and see what was going on. And as he went out, and he went out with a driver of some coach or maybe a horse, I don't remember the details. But he saw a sick person who was obviously very ill, and he said to the sick his companion, "What is that?" And he said, "That is sickness. All people have to deal with sickness." And then he saw several others, but then soon he saw a dead body on the road. And he said, "What is that?" And his companion said, "That is a death. All people ultimately die." And as Siddhartha went on seeing the different conditions in which people were suffering and dying, when he got back, he resolved, because he had found out that he was living in a kind of a fantasy world, he resolved to go out and find and leave, left his wife, left all things behind, and he resolved to find the meaning of life and how could a human being keep from suffering. Because he started to understand that no matter what you did in your entire life, you are going to suffer, and you're going to suffer badly. And so Siddhartha went, and I'm not going to bore you through, you know, because after all, this is not a sermon on Buddhism. But he went through this whole period until he came to a basic insight. Came to the basic insight that is this foundation of Buddhism. And the basic insight of the foundation of Buddhism is this. Life is suffering. Now, at first, that might say, oh, that's really dour. Yeah, stay tuned. Stay tuned. Life is suffering. And then the second thing is, well, Siddhartha asked himself, where does suffering come from? And he came to the conclusion that suffering comes from desire. You desire something, you don't get it, and therefore you suffer. And so what is the point of being a Buddhist then? To let go of all desire, even the desire to be happy. To let go of everything that you desire, and ultimately in letting go of that desire, even to live, you will reach such a state of holy indifference. And that kind of holy indifference, which took him many years, is called nirvana. Nirvana. Now, why do I mention Buddhism at the beginning of a series on the Eucharist? Because the insight that life is suffering is the fundamental insight of, I would say, the entire human condition. Now, you might say, well, wait a minute. My life isn't all suffering. Yeah, kinda. But here's why. We live as people in the 21st century, having benefited from the scientific revolution and an engineering revolution and the industrial revolution. And all of those things, all those revolutions, have gone a long way towards softening the impact and almost sometimes eliminating the impact of most of the suffering that most people felt in centuries before ours. We are the first in the history of humanity to enjoy the level of medicine that we have, to enjoy the level of removal of pain. And especially in Western countries and in our country, we enjoy the removal of hunger most of the time. In all the 40 years that I've been a priest, I have heard about hunger. But I have to tell you, I have never seen a person who was actually hungry in the sense of dying of lack of food. We have eliminated most of that. Today, people are living much longer than they ever did. And we have a standard of living that is much higher than anybody ever dreamt. And more people, even though we hear about poverty a lot, more people are now above the poverty lines than ever in the history of humankind. Education is also higher. Everything compared, now if you compare it to, you know, the height of what, 100%, it's not going to be there, but much higher than what it was historically. Now, why is that? What's that got to do with it? The thing that that has to do with, in terms of the Buddhist insight that life is suffering, is that we don't, in our lives, in this context of our country and the time we're living in, we don't experience suffering from the same things and until much later than most people in history have experienced it. Most people in history experienced hunger and experienced suffering much more readily than we did. They didn't have the kinds of painkillers we have today, the kind of medicine we have today, the availability of food that we have today. They didn't have any of that. And so in the ancient world, and not only the ancient world, in the world of the last 2,000 years, up until the beginning or the beginning of the 20th century, I would say, you had a high level of the occurrence of suffering for all people. And if you would have said, life is suffering, in days past, people would have said, yeah, it is. Whereas today we go, well, not really. I'm having a good time. Okay? But the problem is this. You still are going to suffer. You may have postponed it a little bit. You may have postponed some of the more immediate source of suffering through medicine, all the things that I've said. But sooner or later, you will get down to the fundamental part of being human. And the fundamental part of being human is that you want to live. You want to love. You want and you hunger for life. And the older you get, trust me, I'm starting to feel it. Okay? The older you get, the less of that you get. The more that you still have the hunger, you still have, I want to love and to be loved. I don't want to be sick. You have, I want the people I love all around me. You have all of that. And we try to push it back. You know? We do a good job in our society. I mean, we go out of our way to paint our faces. Okay? And when we are getting older and things are starting to loom, we go get little tucks here and there and try to make things stop. And God only knows, every time I turn on the television, there's a new wrinkle cream, you know, that you can put on. And if you think about it all, in the background of that, the reason why you're doing that, it's because you and I don't want to face the fundamental truth that at its bottom, at its source, life is suffering. The Buddhists have it right. They have it right. Now, what do they have wrong? Because they do have something wrong. What they have wrong is that the only way to get beyond suffering is to let go of all desire. Even the desire not to suffer. That's what they have wrong. Now, why do they have it wrong? Well, actually, what the gospel today is beginning to tell you is that before the beginning, before Jesus, and before the revelation of God, who really God is, Buddhism made sense. You don't want to suffer, and you have no other choices. you gotta let go of the source of suffering, which is desire. But I want you to begin to look at what's happening today in the gospel. In the gospel today, you have Jesus. Now, please understand, these, even the disciples, they have no idea who Jesus is yet. Jesus is just, for them, a weird guy. He's a weird guy who has the ability to do some weird stuff. And they're fascinated with him because he's walking around curing people. He's walking around, you know, I don't remember if this happened before or after, but I can always think of Jesus in that boat when they got a storm in the middle of the lake and all the apostles think they're dying and Jesus is snoring. Okay? And they wake up Jesus and they say, "Get up! Don't you understand that we're about to die?" And Jesus wakes up and he says, "Oh, well, you cut it out." And then he looks at the storm and he says, "Oh, stop it." And the storm goes, "Bruh." Now they know this is a weird dude. No other person says, "Stop it," to a storm and it stops. I tried, but it doesn't work. I thought maybe I could get that with being ordained to the priesthood. But it didn't work. So they know he's a weird guy. And so here he is in this mountain, and he's got 5,000 people coming to hear him. Okay? 5,000. Okay? They didn't have Twitter, and they didn't have Facebook. They didn't have TV or radio. So pretty much listening to a speaker was pretty much all they had in terms of entertainment. And even seeking for life. Because remember, these people know life is suffering. And anybody, anytime somebody gives them a little hope, they go hear him. And so Jesus sees all of these people. And then he says to the apostles, and evidently this gospel says that it was a test. He says, "How are we going to give people, all of these people, to eat? Because they're hungry." And the apostles said, "There's no way. Even if we work for an entire year, for wages for the entire year, we wouldn't even have enough to give even everybody just a little taste." And then they say, "Here's this little boy that's got 5 loaves and 3 fish, or 2 fish, whatever." And then Jesus says, "Have the people sit down." And then Jesus takes the bread, give thanks. Now, I want you to notice here the similarity that is already happening with the Eucharist. Because when Jesus institutes the Eucharist, he will do the same thing. He will take the bread, he will give thanks, and he will give it to the apostles. He does the same thing here. That's why the church is starting this 5-week period with this story. Because it's the beginning of teaching you that this is all about Jesus filling the hunger of humankind. You see, in this situation, hunger and the impossibility of anyone feeding and taking away the hunger is used as a metaphor to point you towards the impossibility of taking away the suffering of all humankind. It's using hunger as a metaphor. And so what's happening is that Jesus is faced with a problem of hunger that cannot be solved by any natural means. Not even 200 days' wages can it solve that problem. And so when Jesus says, "Have everybody sit down," what he, and then he takes the fish and he takes the bread and he says, start giving it to the people. Now, how did that look? I don't know. I'd love to, what, were they taking out loaves and many more appeared? Or I have no idea how that occurred. But notice what's happening. What Jesus is teaching is that when he is present, the central hunger of humankind is satisfied. That's the metaphor. This is not just about feeding people with bread. This is about a metaphor. Remember the other metaphor that Jesus used when he was with a woman at the well? And she's drawing water and he asks her for a little water. And then Jesus says to the woman of the well, if you would have asked me, I would have given you living water so that you would never thirst. And of course the woman says, oh Lord, please give me this living water. She thinks it's actual physical water. But Jesus is not talking about that. He's talking about the metaphor for of thirst as a metaphor for life is suffering. And so when Jesus gives out this food to everyone, the teaching is wherever Jesus is present, human need is eliminated. You don't experience suffering the way you did before. Do you remember when Lazarus dies and Jesus gets the news that he's dead? Jesus is only 2 miles away. 2 miles. And then he says, the apostles say, you want to get going so we can get there before the emergency? Notice the word emergency. Something is emerging that threatens to overwhelm something you love or care about. And so you run so that you can beat that which is emerging. And so Jesus says, nah. Basically, he says, let him die. And when he goes there, after Lazarus is buried, Martha comes out and says, you should have been here. She said to him, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Dig. And Jesus let him die. Why? Because for Jesus, there are no emergencies. There's no emergencies. Nothing can emerge that will overwhelm him. He's God. And if you would have asked Jesus, if you would have asked him, why did you come? Why did you come? There's a direct answer in the Bible. I have come that you may have life and have it to the full. Now, what does that entail? That you don't have it to the full. That the Buddhists are right. That life is a tease. That you have these desires for happiness and you get teased by the want, but you're not gonna get it. Because no matter what you do, in the end, you're gonna have all these desires to love and to continue to live and to share, and it's all gonna die. And you either got to give it up the way the Buddhists do, or you say, is there somebody that can fulfill these desires that I have? Or are the desires themselves the mistake? Which is what Buddhism says. And what Jesus is saying is, I have come that all of those desires that you have, that they may be fulfilled. And that's ultimately what the presence of Jesus in and through the Eucharist is there to tell us. That what we are celebrating is not that the Eucharist is kind of a miracle in the sense of that everything goes away. But if we follow him, that even if the worst things in life happen to you and you get crucified or something like that, which, by the way, every one of you is going to get crucified. Okay, every one of you. Let me tell you, because years ago when my dad was dying of cancer, I stood before his bed, and I was really conscious because there was a cross on top of his bed, and I looked up at that cross, and Jesus was crucified to wood, and I looked down at my father, and he was crucified to cancer. His crucifixion was made of wood. My dad's crucifixion was internal, and it was cancer. So you're going to get crucified to heart disease. You're going to get crucified to something. Right? And what Jesus has come to say is, trust me. Hang on to me. Because everything you desire and everything you want is for real. And there's a future, and you don't have to give up your desires. Because I have come that you may have life and have it to the full. That's why I'm a Christian. I'm a Christian because, man, if Jesus is not risen from the dead, we are up blank creek. We're up blank creek. We're in church, you know. And so, yep. That's why I'm a Christian. And that's why I'm betting my life on all of this. Literally, I'm betting. Listen, if this is not true, I really screwed up my life. If this ain't true, man, am I done. So, there it is. The next 5 weeks, I have come that you may have life and have it to the full. Not Buddhism, a lot better. The gospel of Jesus Christ.